You are listening to the Punk News Podcast, episode 399, the second last episode ever.
What?
I don't know. This is Adam White. Hi. Welcome to the Punkins Podcast. I'm recording here in my basement in Niagara Falls, Ontario. Joining me on the program tonight, out of Grand Rapids, Michigan, the city of brotherly love.
Something like Mr. that. Tom Something Cone. Like that.
Something like that. I don't
What's
know.
What's up, guys?
Grand Rapids, the city of brotherly love.
Actually, it's known as Furniture City, USA, but you know.
Wait,
whatever.
Why? What?
It's like the office furniture. It was the office furniture capital of the world forever. Steelcase, Herman Miller, all those big companies were all located in the area.
I mean, all right, if those companies are there, I guess that's sort of a rational thing, but like that is the most boring.
We're also currently known as more like Beer City USA because we have so many breweries. So that's a little better.
That's a little bit more exciting than hipster. Well, I'm okay with hipster's better than fucking office furniture.
But Adam, building that office furniture provided generation after generation with a good, solid living and allowed us to have a nice middle class baseline here.
Yeah,
Don't disrespect the office furniture.
Yeah, are all those companies now gone?
A lot of them, it's just a big flaming hellhole. Yeah, corporate offices at this point, but there's still some production.
I will say, it's quite elitist of Adam to say he prefers hipsters over furniture company, because as we all know, hipsters begat gentrification and cause sufferation upon the poor man, whereas furniture companies allow the poor man to build himself up and make something for himself.
Allows the poor man a place to sit down while he drinks a $6 soy latte.
That's right.
Anyways, yeah, the furniture city is not that important. Unless we're talking about furniture, the single that Fugazi put out before the argument, that was a cool single.
I don't believe there's any direct correlation, but if there is, John knows it, and I don't. So
you heard John. So we also have John back with us for the second last Punkins Podcast episode ever. John has been on adventures, everyone. So I want to compare the lives of the three of us here just to explain how many adventures that John is on. So for me, as everyone who's like, you know, I don't know, paid any attention to my ramblings on the internet. No, I'm like on month like four or five of some project where I'm just working day and night on. So I'm not really doing anything interesting outside of that. The most interesting thing that has happened to me is that my kid has pink eye, which is not fun or interesting, but that's it. That's what happened, right? So that's the top of the list. Then we have Tom. Tom is like a million years old, so nothing exciting happens to him except the slow creeping hand of the Reaper, right?
I have been traveling a ton, but unfortunately it's been to like Detroit, Indiana, and Kentucky. Not too exotic. So
you would leave the furniture capital of the world and go to Indiana?
Dude, I have so many points at Comfort Inn. It's unbelievable. I have like two free rooms anytime I want them.
Do you just go there because it's a hotel, but there's nothing around the hotel that makes any sense?
No, like I said, just a little bit. I had to go away for a couple of days for work, and my daughter and I went down to Indiana for a couple of days this weekend, and the whole family went away to try to escape the cold for a week during spring break to Kentucky, and it was cold as balls down there too. So,
well, see, we have done things like that before. My wife works in the hotel industry, and whenever there's like a Christmas party at one of these companies, they always, you know, will draw a bunch of random hotel rooms out of a hat and give those to the employees. And the one year years ago when she used to work for Best Western, we won like a stay at the Best Western in Sarnia, Ontario.
Nice.
You know where Sarnia is, right?
It's the Maui of Ontario.
Yeah.
I do know where it is. You have to go through it to get to Toronto from my...
Narnia. Yeah, so, I mean, Narnia rules, man. It's like...
Oh, you wish.
Narnia would be really cool.
There's nothing magical about Sarnia. It's sort of the Scranton of Ontario, maybe.
Yeah, it is a... It's a strip along... Is it on the Detroit River, is it? Or is it on, like...
It's a little further north than that, isn't it?
Body water is on.
I don't know.
In any case, like, so Sarnia is out to the to sort of like the westmost end of the of southern Ontario, north of Windsor, and it is.
Oh, is that the one? If you go, okay, there's two crossings. There's Detroit, and then there's Port Huron. That might be the one you go through when you go through Port Huron.
Yeah, it probably is the Port Huron one. But so Sarnia is, and if you're from Sarnia, I'm sorry, but like it is known to the rest of Ontario
as being a place
where a bunch of chemical plants are. So in the way that you are like the furniture capital of the world, but that's not really that exciting. This is like the chemical manufacturing capital of Ontario, I guess, which just means there's like a lot of smokestacks and like the perception of toxins. And so like we won this room. We're like, yay, we won a room. Where? Sarnia. Like, we have no reason to go to Sarnia. So we just, at one point, we're just like, well, fuck it. We're going to Sarnia. So we're going to go to this hotel and, like, order a pizza or something. Don't, like, there's no point.
Like, your wife working in the hotel, and she, can't you, like, go to any hotel for, like, $29 or something stupid like that?
Yes. But she works for a much nicer hotel chain now, so that's actually, that's come to benefit us. But
nice.
But
you can't pass
still,
that on to friends and, you know. Amateur coworkers.
she recently, and this isn't exciting to anyone, but she recently got some sort of perk where after working for the company for 10 years, she now has that benefit for life.
Nice. Like,
even if she quits. So we're sitting pretty now. So she can leave her job and we can go.
See, John might have exciting stories, but we're going to just take up all the time with our horrible stories. It's going to be, you know,
I know.
So I tied anyway, an onion to my belt, which was the style of the time. You know,
this is the boring shit that me and Tom have to deal with. Meanwhile, John is globetrotting and throwing punk shows. And
see, Adam, what's the important takeaway from this? Marriage takes away all the fun of life. John's just having a blast.
Mm-hmm. So anywho, John, what do you want to talk about all your crazy adventures, or do you want to do the mail first?
Let's do mail first, because I've been gabbing so much on this podcast so far. So I'll throw the ball to you guys and we'll go from there. As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your mail, especially when it involves talk of Best Western and furniture and that kind of a thing. And so let's
filthy rivers and manufacturing.
Yes. So let's reach into our mailbag right here, which I have open, and let's pull out the first letter. I'm grabbing it right here. And this is a very good letter. And this is from a person that writes in a lot. This is from Jason. Jason says, I'm going to Punk and Drublick Fest for what it's worth. And that's from Jason B.
Excellent.
All right.
I think we were discussing whether or not we should or one would or would not go. And basically, I'm just not. I mean, the lineup's pretty cool. It's got Jello and some other cool bands. But I am just not down with camping. I am just not. I'm not a happy camper, if you will.
I was not on that episode, so I don't really know what went on there. I've never been to a camping music festival. And part of me is really fascinated to see like how that would work, like just from like a logistics standpoint. But there's another part of me that was for years, a Boy Scout that took the Boy Scout shit really fucking seriously. And I'm worried that the style and, of camping that would happen during like a music festival camp would just drive me crazy, because they'd be breaking all of like my Boy Scout rules. And I'm like, no, you can't dig that up.
This right? is going to be drunken yahoos, dude, trying to jump over their own fires. This is, yeah.
No. You see, and I'd be like, no, you're supposed to leave the ground like you were never here. What are you doing? Don't dig that. Like, I would just get all mad.
Adam, are you an Eagle Scout?
We don't call them that. So, no. I don't know. I'm not exactly sure what that was. I mean, I was in we don't have Eagle Scouts as a denomination up here. So I don't know. I was like a Boy Scout. And
are you the top Boy Scout? Is what I'm saying.
No, I was in Boy Scouts, and then I was in Ventures after Ventures. Boy Scouts, which was like the thing that you went to when you were like a young teen kind of thing, but. We really quickly, but the problem with Ventures for us is that it became sort of an anarchy thing where the whole rule was that, like, okay, you're all young adults now, so you don't have a leader in ventures anymore. You have an advisor, and you can run your meetings however you want. And sometimes the advisor doesn't come. So there was us as, like, a bunch of young teenage kids. We realized that, like, okay, we can make our own rules here. And they're like, oh yeah, you have to, like, run your own meetings and everything too. Like, you come up with how the meeting works. So we're like, all right. So, like, we sat down and we're like, who votes no uniforms? And everyone's like, all right, no more uniforms. So that was out, like, day one. And then it was like, who votes we go to the store? We're like, yes, I'll go to the store. So ventures became, like, a bunch of us would meet in a church basement and, like, shoot the shit for, like, you know, an hour, and then not an hour, like for, like, 20 minutes, and then wander to a corner store to buy shit.
Sounds pretty awesome,
like,
honestly.
And then just, like,
we're like a gang,
and then just, like,
anything.
And then just, like, teenage around, right? And then by the end of it, we weren't really doing any Boy Scout things, except, like, it was just basically, like, a bunch of people, a bunch of teenagers hanging out doing teenager stuff, except sometimes we went camping, right? So, like, that was it. But so that all sort of flamed out for us, and we didn't continue from there. But there was some sort of tier above that that I think was called, in Canada, it's called Rovers. And I don't really know what that is. It's like seminary, I guess, for Boy Scouts at that point. Like, you're in this for life, and they're gonna bring you to the next level, I guess. But that, I don't know. I never knew anyone.
I would think the mafia, the only way out is to die.
Maybe, or to, like, become a Boy Scout leader. But anyways, we didn't call them Eagle Scouts, so I'm not sure what that is. I assume it's just Boy Scouts with, like, a lot of American.
No, Eagle Scout is the black belt of Boy Scouts in America, in that it's the highest level you can obtain, and you actually have to do, like, a very significant project to be bestowed that honor.
You pretty much have to be really close to adulthood to make it. I mean, I think it's usually, like, a senior in high school.
Yeah. And then you also have to kill
there
a lion.
Might have been
hands.
That.
Yes, we make love to an Eskimo woman.
As soon as they gave us any semblance of responsibility, we really quickly turned this into basically a thing where we sat around and listened to ska CDs and participated in some light show.
All right, well, I'm glad to see this episode of the podcast is staying right on the rails and progressing right along. This is from Derek. He says, hi, I told you guys Strung Out would become a loungecore act even if they were hard at the time anyway. I've listened to this podcast for years. I don't check the site as much, and maybe I should. I love the format, though, and the dedication from some old and new voices. Go Melvins, and a huge Sloppy Seconds fan. Anyway, you promised some love or hate either way from the adolescence, hit or miss. I think you guys bring a diverse sounds. Love the three songs I hear every podcast, by the way. I'm 41. Tom Trauma must have the record collection I wish I hadn't had stolen away from me. And I want to hear a 5-minute rant about any Canadian fest versus an American fest. Plus, if you see Trump in a mosh, would you throw elbows or just trip him? So he got stepped on. That's a legit question. Thanks from Derek.
Covered a lot of ground there.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to approach that. I feel like I throw elbows at people, like, out of love a lot of the time. Like, throwing elbows to me isn't so much like I'm trying to fuck you up. It's more like I really don't want you to collide with my head right now.
I usually just stand back a little further.
Oh. Is it weird that I find it kind of exciting? Like, if, like, a pit opens up and I'm on the edge of it, I feel like I'm too old now to go get in it, which is I know wrong, and that's entirely in my head. I have far too many, like, boring things. I'm like, oh, I got my wallet in my pocket, or I have my glasses on. I guess I can't go in this
$16
pit. This beer is gonna spill. But I kind of like being on the edge of it, specifically to, like, I don't know, to, like, be the hero. Hey, and
here's my move, Adam. This is what happens all the time. I'll be standing on the edge, and somebody like, come on, I'll finally get pushed in, and rather than just go directly to my spot, I'll do, like, two spins around so it looks like I went in intentionally, not that I just got knocked in, and then just go back to my spot. So, you know what I mean, if I get knocked into it, I'll just do, like, two laps. That's my move.
See, that is the thing. If you stand at the back of the mosh pit, you get the best view in the entire place, but then you're always at the threat of getting sucked into the mosh pit.
Yes, and you're getting your groin smashed and getting
I have a particular crowd surfing gripe that came up, like, last week. And I don't feel like I'm at a lot of shows where there are people crowd surfing these days. And I don't know why. I'm just not into whatever the kids are crowd surfing to. But I was at this, I was at a Dirty Nil show a week ago, and it was like a, it was their first show of the year, and they haven't played in St. Catharines in a couple years. So it was really big deal that they came down here, and it was like the 1 year anniversary of the venue that opened up in town. So it was a pretty big show. There were a lot of people out there, and everyone was going kind of crazy. And there was crowd surfing, which is fine. But in this venue, there was like a couple round tables, like bar height round tables that were there, where people were like putting their empties on and things like that. And some douchebag like managed to crowd surf from the pit into like the sides of the room where you should not be, and then into the fucking table that was like almost in front of me and just like smashed glass all over the place. And I mean, maybe that table shouldn't have been there, but I feel that like if you are gonna, if you're gonna get up there and be the guy who wants everyone to touch his butt, you should maybe try to steer yourself away.
Oh, you're supposed to have your back in their hands?
You should, yeah. I'm just saying, you should figure out some way to have a fucking rudder. Like, get one foot down there and use it to steer you through the crush of people away from hitting a table. Because then you just make a mess, and then some guy's got to clean it up.
Well,
but some guy was my friend Eric, and I felt bad for him.
He knew what he was getting into. Anyway.
I mean, it was his bar. But,
listen, you want the glory of the bar business? Sometimes you have to live with the non-glorious parts of it. Cleaning up people's piss and broken glass.
I like this episode so far. I'd really prefer not to talk about anything except for what dumb stories pop into our heads.
As always, you can reach us at podcast@punknews.org. We love getting your letters. One last thing is Dion wanted to clarify. We said he was from South America. Dion's actually from South Africa. So we've got some listeners down there in South Africa, which is cool.
Hoi hoi.
That, I mean, he was the one that was going to the Ska Fest, whatever it was called, out in Long Beach or wherever.
Right.
California, whatever. When you're from South Africa, California is California, right? That's impressive. That's more impressive than South America.
Adam, would you fly from South Africa to California to see Sublime with Rome?
That is like, that's legit to me, like flying, that's flying halfway across the world.
That's
is
a
it
loaded
not?
Question.
That sounds like an
Tom,
adventure.
Would you go across the street to see Sublime with Rome?
You know, if Sublime with Rome was playing my black backyard, I'd draw the blinds, right?
Although if it was South America, for some reason I was not picturing them flying in. I was picturing them like all piling into like a van and then like somehow having to cross the Darien Gap.
I thought you were gonna say like a raft. Like, Adam, that's pretty
good. I thought Adam was gonna go real like racist here for a second too.
Well, I mean, packing in a van is sort of
no, people have vans. I'm just saying that like if you were to get from like anywhere in South America to California, you have to go on the Pan American Highway and you have to cross the Darien Gap, which is this giant, like, it's a horrible death forest that is like right at the border of like Panama and Colombia, where basically like there would be a highway that goes all the way from like, I don't know, wherever in South America, all the way up to Alaska, except for the Darien Gap. Because it's basically a death sentence and no one has bothered to build the road through there. And I just picture that being like an exciting, like, you know, jungle adventure as you had to make your way up to see Sublime with Rome. I mean, mm-hmm. If you're coming from South Africa, you're going to go on a plane.
Yeah, probably.
But whatever. Thank you for the potential accusations of racism.
Well, like I said, the first thing that came to my mind was just like loading up this giant raft, like those people who try to float over from Cuba.
I said a van.
We knew what you meant, Adam. We knew what you meant.
Exactly. We know exactly what you meant.
Anyways, this has been the Punkies podcast.
Thank you very much. See you at the 400.
See you next week. All right, what are we doing? John, you've been on. You've seen some.
Yeah, man.
You've done some things. So the first thing. Let's see. Do you want to talk about globetrotting, or you want to talk about the second or third? I guess the third big punk.
Well, I would say we've done one big one and then two mediums, and or maybe even smalls. And let's go chronologically. The Spring Slamdown was only 9 days ago, but I've had such a week and a half. It honestly feels like it was about 3 months ago. Like, it feels like it was a lifetime, well, not a lifetime ago, but it feels like it was a long time ago, but it was only 9 days. It's crazy. So 9 days ago, we had the Punk News Spring Slam Down. It was, but basically what happens was I promised Crazy in the Brain to headlining show because at the summer soiree, due to various things, they didn't get to play as high up on the bill as I originally said that they could. And so I felt bad about that ever since. So I said, you know what, Crazy in the Brains, I will give you a headlining show in Philadelphia. And so that was really the main purpose of the Spring Slam Down. But of course, Crazy in the Brains is a known band, but they're not like a huge band right now, although they're gaining some traction for sure. So I had to do a killer bill. So I did the Spring Slam Down, which was opening was Jade of Posers doing her first solo performance ever because Posers is broken up now. Then it was going to be the Up Up Ups, who were a newer band that I just learned about, now, I don't know, about 4 months ago, which are really, really cool. And then after that was the Drugettes, and then Crazy in the Brains doing a headlining performance. And the cool thing was is the whole thing was done like a boxing match. It opened up with the Rocky theme. Well, actually, when people came in, I made little fight programs, and I gave everybody a fight program. I could do a boxing matches, and it, you know, it had bios of all the fighters, and it had like veterans on their top picks. So I had Mike Park as a veteran. I had Brian Gorsegner as a veteran. I had Dominic Dabia of Tsunami Bomb as a veteran. And the little fight program. And it was called Stage Side instead of Ringside, which I was quite proud of. And so it opened up with the Rocky theme. And then I got up. Oh, and I decorated the stage like a boxing ring with like red, white, and blue ropes going across it. And so then I got up on stage and when the Rocky theme was playing. And I did like a Michael Buffer kind of thing. Like, you know, tonight there are four contestants, but only one contestant will win. Who will it be? And then I had a belt that said a championship belt that said heavyweight punk rock champion. Worldwide heavyweight punk rock champion. And then the first person was Jade. And then so Jade was really cool. No one knew what she was going. Oh, and I had to step back though. So Crazy in the Brains all week long up leading up to the event were acting like weird. And I don't know why, but part of it is they are weird. So they're always acting weird. And so they weren't really posting a whole lot about the show on their Facebook, which unnerved me. So the day before I said, oh, can you guys put this on your Facebook? And I can't remember if they did or if they didn't or whatnot. So also because we had a very short time between all four bands, each band was bringing one piece of equipment. That way they could all share and the changeover would be very little. Crazy in the Brains were bringing a bass cabinet. Around 3 o'clock, Chris of Crazy in the Brains, the singer, he's like, is it all right if we're going to be a little late? And so I said to him, yeah, no problem. I mean, as long as you're there by your set time, it doesn't matter. But then I realized, oh, wait, you guys are bringing the bass cabinet. Like, you kind of can't be late. And then they kind of like said, oh, we're having van troubles. And I'm like kind of getting furious with them because they don't need to bring their drums. All they need to bring is a bass, a guitar, and a bass amp. You could fit that in a car. And they like stopped answering their text messages and Facebook messages and stuff. And I'm like, oh my God, I've got about 2 hours until the show and Crazy in the Brains might be bailing. Adam, you got a text message from, or not a text message, a Facebook message from me.
Yeah. You seemed like, you were in the shit at that point. And then I responded, I'm like, oh no, well, tell me what's happening. And then there was a silence for a long time, which is understandable because, you know, you were actually having to deal with whatever was going on. But I was worried that you would just like run off.
Well, I mean, no matter what, I would have done it without them. But I would have been like really pissed off at them because like this was for them, you know. And so meanwhile, a couple of the other bands started freaking out because they didn't have a bass cabinet. And I'm like, OK, so I went to Guitar Center like online and I found one. And I'm like, will this one work? And they're like, we don't know. We need a bass cabinet. I'm like, well, will this one work? Because I will go buy this one for you right now. They're like, we don't know if that one will work. And I'm like, how do you know that you need a bass cabinet, but you don't know if this one will work? So I was getting annoyed at them. Sure enough, sound man Colin at Creep Records, he came through. He brought one with him. I'm driving down to the gig. Like, it's about an hour and a half before the gig, I still don't know if Crazy in the Brains are going to show up. And I'm like, oh my God. I'm like, I don't know what to do. And honestly, I the summer soiree, Adam White, you can agree. Complete home run, right? Complete home run, the summer soiree.
Yeah, nothing. We somehow survived, and we shouldn't.
But
have.
No, I mean honestly, it was a kick ass evening. We didn't just survive.
Yeah, no, yeah, know? Okay. I'm underplaying it there. It was like wildly successful, and all of the many things that should have went wrong. All
right, happened. Right.
So you were right. Doomed.
Well, and then the Christmas show, like I was sure that one was going to be a failure because up until the day of, I had sold like 14 tickets. But then, sure enough, the day of the show, like 60 or 70 or 80 people showed up and it was a success. Not as huge as the summer soiree, but I didn't think it would be, but it was a definite success. And I'm thinking, this one's going to be the crap out. This one's going to be the crap out. And plus I was mad because I'm a big fan of Crazy in the Brains and I'm pretty good. Well, I'm pretty good friends with them. And I'm thinking if these guys just screw me over just because they feel like doing it or they just bail because they feel like bailing, then they're not going to be my friends anymore. And I'm pretty mad at them. You know what I mean? About an hour before the show, no, really about a half hour before, well, not about an hour before the show, I get a text message from them that they say, no, we're definitely going to be there. And I'm like, they damn well better. So I lied to all the other bands. And I said, oh, Crazy in the Brains are definitely going to be here. And I didn't know they were definitely going to be there, but I knew they told me they definitely were going to be there. You know, but you know when people are acting vague and they're not giving direct answers, it usually says like something's up. You know what I mean? So anyways, so Jade kicked off the performance. It was cool. No one knew what she was going to do. It was her very first solo performance ever. She comes out. She does this weird, creepy spoken word thing for like 5 minutes. I don't know how to describe it except for it kind of was like centered around angst and hatred and just, you know, wanting to destroy everything, which I enjoyed quite a bit. Then she rolls under the ropes like a professional boxing match, grabs her guitar, rips the ropes in half with her hands, and then starts playing her set. She did a short set, about 15 minutes, including a cover of Bonnie Tyler's All I Need Is a Hero. And it was great, and people were into it. Then between each band, I had like 80s montage music playing, like Karate Kids, You're the Best Around, or Eye of the Tiger by Survivor, or that kind of a thing. And people were into it. People were into the flyers. Then Up Up Ups played, and they were really awesome. Up Up Ups are kind of like Wanda Jackson meets 77 Punk. Then after their performance, Crazy in the Brain still hadn't showed up. I'm like, we only got one more band to go. Where are these guys? They show up, and they really were having band problems. And you know, bands are just bands. You know, they're not known for their punctuality. So I was thrilled. And what was really good is a lot of people did show up. We had a very, very good turnout. Next, the Drugettes played. And on the site, like a lot of people hate the Drugettes. I just don't see why, man. I just think they're fantastic. I mean, they played about a 45-minute super punchy set. I mean, it's not like super groundbreaking. It's not like it's, you know, I don't know, Suicide, the band, or Hawkwind or whatever. You know, it's just four gals just doing awesome punk rock with some funny parts to it because, you know, there's an homage to Clockwork Orange. And they just sounded so good, and people there loved it. Although I will say some skinheads showed up, non-racist skinheads, because the Drugettes, I guess, are affiliated with the skinhead scene. Man, skinheads have no sense of humor whatsoever, do they?
I feel like it's been a while since I've actually had.
Yeah, we don't have too many.
Like that. Anymore. I was going around handing out glow bracelets. They did not want glow bracelets. Let me tell you.
I mean, I would have taken one too, just to get you to leave me alone. But I doubt you'd see me in a glow bracelet.
People love glow bracelets. I mean, I can't get them away fast enough, except to skinheads. You know, people love glow bracelets because they're fun. Anyways, yeah, the Drugettes were awesome. I don't know why people hate them on the site.
Don't tell me what's fun, Gentilly. I'll tell you what's fun.
So then Crazy in the Brains set up, and Crazy in the Brains did an amazing, amazing set. It's probably the best set I've ever seen them do. They did a whole bunch of new stuff. They did a mini Operation Ivy cover set in the middle of their set with the lead singer of Nervous Triggers. He came in, like, did the vocals, if you will. They did a cover of Jim Carroll's People Who Died. And I was so happy because, honestly, I think only about a third of the people at the show really knew Crazy in the Brains. Some people knew them from the summer soiree, but a lot of people were just sticking around because of the Drugettes and Up Up Ups. And everybody loved them, and they were fantastic. And you know, they've got a xylophone, and Jeff plays the xylophone in the band. He was playing so quickly, like the sticks were breaking and flying off into the audience, and it was great. And so then after Crazy Brains played, I got back up on stage to announce the winner. The joke being is that there it was a four-way tie, so I had championship belts for every band, and on each belt was one of the four original Ramones. And it was just an awesome evening, and I gotta say, man, I'm going to pat ourselves in the back. Punk News is killing it, baby. Punk News is killing it. It was an awesome show. And it was also cool because none of those bands are really like super well-known. People know them. Like the last show was, you know, Cassie Ramone, Colleen Green, and Joe Jack Talcum, who are all nationally known, if you will. None of the bands at the last one are nationally known, with maybe Crazy in Your Brains a little bit. But it was a success and people were into it. And I'm feeling good, but I'm also nervous that is the next one going to be the crack out? I mean, really? You know,
maybe there ain't going to be a crack.
Maybe. I mean, honestly, we do plan these very carefully. And I do feel we put in much more effort than the average promoter for the average punk rock show. You know what I mean?
I think we can just assume safely that you are going to you will continue to sail closer and closer to the sun, and you will never get your comeuppance.
Well, all right. Well, I will take that. meanwhile, I don't want to give too much away, but we're already at the early stages of another bigger event. I don't want to say anything because we'll jinx it. Do you guys find that, like, if you say anything out loud, like if you're going to interview somebody really cool and say, oh, I'm going to interview so-and-so, like it never happens. Like it always gets jinxed. I find that. Do you guys find that, or am I just crazy?
I think you're probably, it's mostly psychosomatic, or I think you're probably crazy. It's probably a coincidence. You probably mentioned, could you know, be. Everything out loud, and the 20% that doesn't work out that you say out loud, you focus on it.
It could be. Could be. Well, anyway, we're going to have Prince and Lady Gaga playing the next Punk News concert, so I'm sure that'll happen. And David Bowie's going to show up, too.
You're going to have to break that $7 ticket price, I think.
Now, David was cool. He's like $7 is cool, man. He's like, five. He's like, I'm going to beat you guys.
I can't take it with me, $4. Literally.
Yeah. So anyway, we're already at work on the of the next thing, I think. The issue that I have right now, well, I don't want to say, I don't want to just, I've got two Punk News projects that I want to do this year, and they both take a significant amount of time, and the question is, what should get the focus? I wish I could be more specific, but I can't. So we'll see anyway. Keep your eyes peeled. Keep your ears open. We got a lot of cool stuff coming at Punk News. And I don't know, man. I mean, I'm feeling charged. You know what I'm saying? I did think that this last show was gonna be a burnout because we didn't sell that many tickets beforehand either. But honestly, at smaller punk shows, people don't buy tickets.
Punks suck
at
buying advance tickets. Always have.
But then, you know, day of, a ton of people showed up and bought tickets right at the door, you know?
Yep. That's the way it works.
I'm just, nobody wants to really come in. Sounded earlier like you were about to say, like, keep your eels. And I was like, what's he going to say? Like, what's the phrase? Like, eels. Keep your eels slippery, keep your eels. Like, what do you keep an eel? But you didn't do it. And I'm disappointed. So anyways, John, that was part one. So you threw a show. It was pretty cool. It did not blow up in your face, but it could have. And, you know, a little bit of excitement. The potential of failure is always good to keep one on their toes,
that is,
right?
So, keep on your toes.
Number two.
So not the next day, but the day after that, I flew to the Netherlands for the world's biggest record convention. Every year there's this thing called the Jarboers Megaplex and CD, some Dutch word for a convention. It is the world's biggest record convention. It's on a Saturday and Sunday. I got to Netherlands on a Wednesday. And so I had Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday before the record convention. Boys, let me tell you, man, the Netherlands is paradise. It is absolute paradise. I was in Amsterdam. Amsterdam has the largest record collection, largest number of record stores per capita in the world. There's something like 45 record stores in Amsterdam, and Amsterdam is not that big. I went to Concerto Records, which is a gigantic, it's really like five record stores put together. They got a ton of old stuff, a ton of new stuff. I went to Backbeat Records, which is like jazz. I went to Record Mania, which is kind of like 70s stuff. I went to Homesick Records. It's like 70 stuff. Record Mania is kind of like more contemporary stuff. I went to Velvet Records, which is like all new, basically all new stuff. And the record stores there are fantastic. I wouldn't say they're, honestly, I wouldn't say they're exceptionally better than a very good U.S. record store. Like, their record stores in Netherlands are as good as what I would say a very good record store is in the States. Like, they don't have anything as gigantic as Amoeba or even as varied and diverse as Streetlight and Rasputin Records. But their average record store is much better than the average United States record store, just because it seemed to be a more vibrant scene. There's a bigger diversity of people in those record stores. In the States, record stores is almost all middle-aged and younger dudes. You have some women. In the Netherlands, it's almost all ages and pretty much split equally between the genders. I mean, the stores themselves are just great. The Dutch people are just so polite and so pleasant and helpful. I went to a punk show there too. I went to see the band called The Need. Crime in Amsterdam is like non-existent. I think at any given time, I was the most dangerous guy in the city. You know what I mean? And so I took the night train out in the middle of nowhere in the Amsterdam in a place called Harlem, in Harlem, Amsterdam. Interestingly, do you guys think their punk shows are a lot like United States punk shows, or they're completely different? What do you guys think?
I have no idea, John.
It was almost identical. Like, it was €7 to get in, which is about 10 or 11 bucks. I believe it was a licensed venue, and they had, you know, basically a small bar-sized area in the back. You know, the punks there were basically punks. The band, I guess, would surprise me. They were called The Need, and they were a Dutch band, but they sounded very much like an American band, which surprised me. Like, it seemed they wanted to sound like American punk bands. The only difference is, instead of like punks bringing like piss beer at the count, they had like a counter there, and they were selling like high quality beer. And instead of people having like red Solo cups or like, you know, crappy cans, like, they all drank from like fancy beer glasses. That was the only real difference.
It sounds more like what I want to do now.
Hmm.
Like, I want to go to a punk show and have a nice beer and a fancy glass.
Well, most of them have that option. We just choose not to exercise it. You know, it's not like they only have PBR or Miller Lite or whatever.
But what's interesting is if you go to like a beer place in North America, like a craft beer place, they'll have like 80 beers literally. In Amsterdam and in the Netherlands, most places only have like 4 or 5 beers, but it's like their beers or their select beers. You know what I mean?
So at the record stores, John, so the exchange rate. So does that make records there a little more expensive or not too bad?
Good question. Records in general are more expensive in the Netherlands. Sometimes a great deal more expensive. I wouldn't classify any of the stores as cheap. And we'll get into that when we talk about the record convention. But what they do have is a lot of European stuff that you don't see in America. 12-inch singles, Holland presses. What's interesting is, I didn't know this, Holland is famous for their pressing. Even though it's a relatively small country, Holland was one of the biggest record producers in the 70s and 80s. And not only that, is they produced a lot of unique records and unique covers with unique art. So that's why a lot of collectors like stuff from Holland, because the covers themselves are unique in Holland. And Holland people are known for loving music, you know. One other thing I got to mention, and I don't know if this makes me sound sexist or not. I don't think it does. Dutch girls are so beautiful. I must have fell in love 150 times a day. I mean, they all ride bicycles. They all wear black jeans. They all wear black leather jackets. And they all wear like either a white or a striped shirt. And you see them go by on their bicycle. And you know, you talk to them. They kind of sing when they talk. Like, how are you today? Do, 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 do. And they were just lovely. Like, the Dutch girls are – they're perfect. I wouldn't.
Did you learn as you were traversing around Amsterdam how there is like a very definite like bike lane to the sidewalks, where if you were standing around like a North American person, you were going to get hit?
Yeah, I didn't even know how to walk in the Netherlands when I first got there. I couldn't figure it out, because in the Netherlands, most streets have four lanes. There's the walking lane, the bicycle lane, the car lane and the train lane. And the bike, to a North American, someone from North America, the bike lane looks identical to the walking lane, but it's not. And you got to be careful because they will run you over. You know what I mean? But man, I mean, the Netherlands is just so pleasant, and it's just a wonderful place, man. It really is. I loved it.
Well, I've talked about this before, and I talked about it a couple weeks ago, but this area where I live, the western part of Michigan, Furniture City, USA, part of the reason the factories are so successful is because we had all these Dutch people, and they are known for just working their butts off. The old Protestant work ethic. But also, there's tons of tall, blonde people. I mean, like, I'm half Dutch.
The weird thing is,
you wouldn't look at me and say I'm half Dutch. My wife is half Dutch. I mean, our kids are half Dutch, more or less. But it's just, I live in this Dutch area. But it, like I said, it was all the uptight Dutch, the ones who wanted to leave.
Yeah, it didn't seem like anybody was ever working, to tell you the truth. That's what I was trying to figure. Like in America, you'll see, like, you know, B&G accountant, you know, or Sam Smith Insurance, or, you know, Bill Jones attorney. You don't see any of that at all. Like, the only kind of businesses you see are, like, shops, you know? I don't know what people do for a living.
They sell weed. They either sell weed or they're prostitutes. Those are the only two jobs.
I'm sure there's an incredibly, like, boring end of the city where you had no reason to go to that was just full of, you know.
Accountants. People accountants. Suits. Yeah, people
yeah. Suits. Accountants.
So, how Tom there tried to sneak into your cool American abroad story and bring it back to Furniture City, USA, or whatever the fuck you
were. I get paid 25 cents for each mention. It's really racking it up.
Listen, if any of you listeners ever go to the Netherlands, I will give you the go-to line to make the pretty girls crack up, the pretty Dutch girls crack up. You go up to them and you say, "You might not realize it, but I'm not from around here." And it killed every single time. Oh, and also, like, we don't really think about this, but in North America, we say, "Hi, how are you?" or "What's going on?" Europeans don't really say that. So they think it's kind of cute and quaint when you say to them, "How are you doing?" or "What's going on?" Because they don't really say that, you know, because we're not actually asking, "How are you?" Like, we don't really care. So they think it's funny because when they first hear it, they hear it as actually asking, "How are you?" You know what I mean? So.
So, John, you're over there. You're falling in love 10 times a day.
I really you see these beautiful girls go by on the bicycle, and it's like it's paradise.
Right. But what the people really want to know, or what I really want to know, is not about your love life, but about the shipping logistics of your trip here. So you went to the world's largest record convention, and you went to a handful of record stores. You said were.
I didn't go to a handful. I went to like 25
record stores. Okay. So, and I've seen the photos. You bought some shit. I'll let you get into that. How did you get these items back to America?
Good question. Here's the answer. Right now, Iceland is offering extremely cheap flights because they want people to visit Iceland, because I was in Iceland for an hour and a half on changeover. Woo, it's cold in Iceland, baby. I don't know why anyone would really go visit. They're like, "Oh, it's beautiful. It's beautiful.
It's cold. Okay, well,
it might be beautiful,
right?
But it burns your face off, you know?" So anyways, the point being is, so flights from Iceland and to Iceland are very cheap. So I got one free check-on bag and one carry bag. And I was only there for a week. And honestly, like, men's clothes doesn't really take up that much space. Underwear, socks, undershirts doesn't really take up that much space. So I had plenty of room in my suitcase. And I said, "Well, if I have too much, hell, I'll just leave my old t-shirts behind, you know, like, or even my old underwear." You know what I mean? Like I can buy new underwear for cheap, you know. I'm not getting another Slayer Decade of Aggression on vinyl mint condition. You know what I'm saying?
All right. So you just put in your bag. That is not as exciting as I was hoping.
So how many pieces are we talking about, John? How many pieces?
How many?
I mean, I'd love you to tell me how many dollars 60, you spent, but I'm not going to ask. But how many pieces did you buy?
I will tell people is, listen, I flew to the Netherlands to go to a record convention. You know what I mean? So I didn't spend $50. Yeah. You know what I mean? But I didn't spend $1,000 either. You know, I spent between those two, you know, I mean, listen, it's my annual vacation. I you know, and what I enjoy is records. So And I mean, what's the point of flying to the Netherlands to buy records if you're only going to spend, you know, $50? Like, that's stupid, you know? So, I mean, I didn't go crazy, but, you know, I went with a planned tactical strike, if you will.
And, how many pieces did you buy? How many units did you bring home?
About 70, I would say.
And I'm looking at this place, the picture. So it looks like, you know, we've all been to conventions, you know, and it's just this giant, like, 100,000 square foot room full of records. How do you... I mean, my problem would be is every table I want to buy something, like you must go through it once or twice. You take notes, you write shit down. How do you attack that?
Great question. So this was hilarious. So I went with a couple of guys from the Jupiter Records. And so we get down there and we rush in. And as soon as we it's in this place called the Jarboers Center in Utrecht. And it's basically the Jarboers Center is basically like a football stadium, except for there's no it's a gigantic airport hangar is what it is, an airplane hangar. So we go in. We rush in, and then it's like all antiques, like old magazines, and we're like, did we just make the biggest screw up in the world? Like, are we here like a week early or something like that? But then we saw dudes with bags making a beeline for the back. It's actually two airline hangars. So we ran through, and then we went to the number of records there is insane. It is literally an airport hangar full of records. Like, you literally cannot see to the end of the room. If you got a ladder, you couldn't see to the end of the room. It's something like over 500 sellers, but these sellers aren't like guys with like five or six boxes. Each seller has like 50 boxes of records or more. Like these sellers are the sellers of the world. Like, these guys are the top dogs. You know what I mean? And these guys sell all over the world. And so Tom's question is, how do you not? Well, first of all, you can't see every record there. You literally cannot see every record there. You can't even see 80% of every records. I mean, you can't see 20% of the records there. Luckily, it's roughly broken down into genre. But, like, you know, a lot of sellers have a lot of different kind of genres. I hung out mostly in the punk and metal section. There's more metal than punk, but because there's so many sellers, there's still way more punk than you could ever see. And as you're flipping through it, you're finding white whale after white whale. Like, there's so many awesome records. Like if I got one of these records at a North American record convention, I would buy it right away and, like, basically, like, speed home. Like I'd be like, wow, I got it. Those records I was putting back. Like, I was putting back Rudimentary Penis Farce. I put back Guar Scum Dogs of the Universe. The reason being is I can get those on Discogs if I really want to. And I did have a certain amount of money I wanted to spend. I didn't want to, like, just – I mean, you could literally spend $30,000 easy. You know what I mean? So some stuff you got to throw back. But at a normal record convention, when you throw some stuff back, it kind of bums you out sometimes. But you're getting so much awesome stuff that you really don't care about throwing it back, because you're getting even better stuff. What you should do is, if someone does go, don't blow all your money at once, because it's very tempting to. But there's so many sellers throughout the 2 days that, you know, usually the best stuff is found within the first hour of a record convention. You know, there's the mad rush in the beginning. People are crazy. You're getting crazy stuff, right? And then after that, then you get some cool stuff. But, the, you know, the primo stuff is usually gone after the first hour of a record convention. In Utrecht, that, like, feeling of, like, amazing stuff just is just waiting there. It's all day long, both days. So you really shouldn't buy, like, every single thing that you want that you see, or even you should really only buy the stuff that you really, 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 really have to have, because all day long you'll be seeing that stuff. I didn't plan to buy a bunch of Ramones records when I went, but I just kept coming across later day Ramones records, which are very hard to find in the States. And so I was getting those. And the weird thing was, it was almost like bad mojo, is all weekend long, I'm like, man, I hope this guy has this record. And there it was. And then somewhere else, I'm like, oh, man, I hope this guy's got that record. And there it was. I probably had about 25 records in my brain that I said, oh, I hope they have this record.
So, like, you said in your brain, you didn't say it out loud, joke. Jinx yourself.
True, indeed. Like, for example, I wanted the Dutch version of the Clash's Train in Vain. Because on the flip side, it's got a Bank Robber and Rockers Galore on the same side in tribute to the Jamaican style. It was there, you know. I wanted the first Death in June record, the first controversial Death in June record. It was there. I'm trying to think what other. Oh, I wanted Danzig 3. It was there.
You should have bought every Danzig vinyl you could find just to sell to our friends on our wacky fan site group, man. They seem to will pay any amount of money for that stuff.
Oh my God. Tom, you're going to taste that Danzig fan group.
I think they wake up thinking about Danzig and they go to sleep thinking about Danzig. I love Danzig. I've been a fan for 25 years, but I don't think I love them as much as most of these people. 30 years.
We aren't jack shit compared to those guys. Aren't jack shit to compare to the guys of the Danzig faith. But you make a good point, though. Records generally are not that cheap. Like in American Record Convention, you can get some good deals, and really all day long in American Record Conventions, you can get good deals all day long. At Utrecht, I did get a couple of crazy steals. Like I got the first thing I got there was the original press of the first Crass record, which is different than all the subsequent presses. It's the Small Wonder press. The first record I got while I was there made the whole weekend. It didn't matter what I got for the rest of the weekend because I got an amazing white whale. But that being said, most records are not cheap, and most are actually slightly more expensive. So if you say to yourself, well, I'm not going to spend more than market price, especially if I can get it somewhere else, then you'll have a really you'll get the cool stuff that's a little bit cheap that you really really want instead of, you know, kind of wasting money. One guy had Danzig 1 and 2, which I wanted to buy, but he wanted like 150 euros for both of them, not combined.
Those are still
and that's like over.
I think the first four are still
no way, Tom. There's bootlegs of them, but so not original.
Available in CD.
Well, I mean, they made them in their 1990, 1991, 1992.
Deaf American or American ones were still in print, rather. But anyway, it doesn't matter.
Well, the CDs are, but not the records. Sure? I'm talking records. Yeah, I'm positive. I'm absolutely positive.
Anyway, so what are we talking about?
So anyway, but
so most of what you bought was used then or new? Mostly used?
Oh, there's no point in buying new stuff. You can get new stuff anywhere you want. No, every single thing I got was used.
I mean, what are we talking average? $20?
Well, it depends. I got a whole bunch of 7 inches by the Suite, like Holland presses.
The Suite?
Covers. Like those were €2. Yeah, those guys, yeah. Those were €2 each. Most of the records I bought were 10 to 20 euros, which is about $15 to $25. Slayer is cheaper in Europe just because it's more common. I got a bunch of Slayer records. I got a bunch of Ramon records. The most expensive record I got was probably Danzig 3, which was about market value. But one thing you have to be careful is there's a lot of bootlegs going around, and a lot of the sellers don't make it clear that they're bootlegs. Like generally in America, if it's a bootleg, they either price it so it's clear that it's a bootleg, or they put fan club on it, or, you know, it's a brand new record, so it's clear that it's a bootleg because, you know, they haven't made Danzig 3 since 1993, and here's a brand new crisp record. You have to be careful in Utrecht because a lot of less scrupulous sellers, especially sellers from countries that are famous for their bootlegs, will take a bootleg and put it in an old plastic sleeve and even swap out the paper sleeve inside for an old paper sleeve. So you got to be real careful about that. The rule of thumb in Utrecht is if it's too good to be true, it almost definitely is.
Well, more so than in American conventions. Close to all those Russian bootlegs over there that are a lot harder to get
over. I hate to say it, the Italians.
The Italian bootlegs?
I see a lot of the Russian ones online. I don't see a lot of the Italian ones. The Italian sellers are honestly not great about letting you know that it's a bootleg. You know, one thing is, I won't go on forever. If you guys have questions, ask me questions. But it is interesting how there's a difference in negotiation. Like Scottish guys and English guys, it's like the same as America. Like, you know, you can knock it down about 30% or so. Or if you say, you know, you got 20 euros on this, will you take 15? That's not seen as an insult. That's seen as like an introduction to negotiation. You know what I mean? The Germans do not see it that way.
you have insulted my honor.
like the Germans, if they got like a 20 euro record, you're like, oh, will you take 15? They get like pissed off. And this one German guy, I bought like 4 or 5 7-inches from, and he said to me, "Do you want the plastics?" And I was like, "Is he asking me? Do I want a plastic bag?" Because I thought that was kind of weird because they don't really do plastic bags in Europe, which is kind of good, honestly. And I said, no, I got a book bag right here. And he says, no, do you want the plastics? And I realized he was asking me, do I want the plastic sleeves on the 7 inches I just bought? You know what I mean? And so I said to him, yeah, I want the sleeves. And he was mad that I wanted to keep the sleeves on the 7-inch records that I just bought. You know what I mean? I got two more quick stories. An English guy, he had some Inner City Unit records, which is a Hawkwind spinoff group. So I said, is this Inner City Unit? I said, is this Inner City Unit? And the guy goes, yeah. So suddenly the dude and I are talking about Hawkwind. A guy walks up. He's like, are you guys talking about Hawkwind? And we're like, yeah. And so three of us are talking about Hawkwind. And I kid you not, a fourth guy comes up and joins in the conversation. So within the span of 3 or 4 minutes, a mini Hawkwind convention broke out, which was hilarious.
You should have seen how many of those beautiful Dutch girls that John fell in love with rolled their eyes and walked away from those four guys having that conversation.
Well, that's the truth. There's also incredibly expensive records there. One guy had like a 5,000 euro Rolling Stone record. It's the rare promo press of Sticky Fingers. Another guy had a whole bunch of really expensive 7 inches, like, you know, obscure pressings of like Monkees records and Beatles records and that kind of a thing. So this Japanese guy walks up, and I'm going to say just like the Japanese guy said, so I'm not trying to be funny, but this is how the guy said it. He goes, how much for who? And the guy goes, 1,000 euros. And then the Japanese guy goes, too much, too much. And the guy takes the record and he goes, promo press, promo press. And the Japanese guy just shook his head and goes, too much, too much. And he walked away like suggesting that the guy was bringing shame upon himself for selling it for that much, which I thought was hilarious.
In Japan, you have to hang yourself if you try to sell a record for too much money.
So anyway, that was my Utrecht adventure. It was awesome. Everyone should go. It really is as amazing as people say. Like, it is so amazing. Like, the rare records, the sheer volume of records, it's amazing. It's an absolutely amazing record convention. It's the greatest record convention ever for a reason. Hmm.
John, that sounds really cool. It sounds really expensive, but it sounds really cool. What should we do? I guess we should play a song and then we'll come back and have a quick chat.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So not to be creepy and keep talking about the beautiful Dutch girls, but they really are just extremely pretty. So the girl at Velvet Records is apparently in Holland or the Netherlands. They just released like this big series called The Golden Age of Dutch Pop Music. And it's about 20 CDs. And each CD is basically a singles compilation of Dutch bands that were famous in the 70s and 80s. So I say to the girl, I say, well, which of these is the best? Because they had like four of them there. And she says, well, what kind of music do you like? I like, you know, punk, garage, that kind of a thing. And she's like, well, you would like The X. No, well, she said, I couldn't hear what she said. I'm like, Vex. I'm like, what? She points to it. And I'm like, oh, The X. I'm like, oh, I've got The X. And then I sound like a total dick because I asked her, like, what's good? And then I'm like, I've got that. So then I said, no, which of these compilations is the best? And she says, she goes, Normal, like without hesitation. So I bought this CD compilation by the Normal, which was a Dutch group, 74 to like 84 or something. And they kind of sound like The Sweet crossed with Nazareth. And I don't think they were a joke group, but they have a lot of like funny songs, I think, because it's all in Dutch. And I wish I could understand what it is. But this song is called Beer, Beer, Beer. And it's apparently a split song with a guy called Johnny Hose. So this is the Normal and Johnny Hose doing Beer, Beer, Beer.
Ik heb geen zin in een glaske water. Ja, mijn lust alleen maar bier. Geen limonade, chocomel of cola. Ja, mijn lust alleen maar bier.
Bier, 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 bier.
Ik was laatst met mijn vrouw in de woestijn. Daar was alleen maar zonneschijn. Ik had zo'n dorst, ik dacht dat ik zou stikken. Toen kwam iemand op mijn schouder stikken.
Toen wil een glaasje water.
Ik zei bewaar dat water maar voor later. Geen zin in een glaasje water. Ja, mijn lust alleen maar bier. Geen limonade, chocomel of cola. Ja, mijn lust alleen maar bier.
Bier, 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 bier. Bier, 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 bier. Bier, bier, bier.
Ik was laatst met mijn vrouw in.
Honda, Mitsubishi, dat zijn Toyota.
Kijk, waar is dat land toch groot? We liepen als maar verder toen zei Dina. Ik wil iets super anders gooi ik door. Toen kwam er een spleet op met een kapje thee. Ik zei spelen die thee maar door de play.
En ik heb geen zin in een
glaasje
water. Ja, mijn lust alleen maar bier. Geen limonade, chocomel of cola. Ja, mijn lust alleen maar bier.
Bier, 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 bier. Bier, 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 bier. Bier, 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 bier. Bier, 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 bier. Bier, bier, bier.
Jongens, is er nou niemand die een glaasje bier voor mij heeft? Ik ga kapot van de dorst. Het schuim staat al op mijn lippen. Als ik maar aan zo'n glaasje bier kon nippen. Geef me nou zo'n vol glas dat ik eens lekker kan hijsen.
All right, we're back. Let's talk a little bit about some of the stuff that happened in the past week. There was a handful of media that might be of interest to some of our punk rock people, young and old. The premier one here, or the one that I think is the most interesting of the group, is that there's a new video by The Damned for the song Look Left. It's a track off of their recent record, Evil Spirits, that came out on April 13th on the, what are the labels there? It was on Search and Destroy and Spine Farm Records. So you should go check this out. I thought it was interesting. I thought it was pretty effective. Tom, you're an old fart here.
Yes.
What's your
okay. The song was very theatrical, very loungy kind of, which The Damned certainly can do and they can do well. I just hope the whole record doesn't sound like that. I think that would be a nice diversion, like twice across 10 or 12 tracks. But I wonder if that's a good representation of what it's going to sound like. I was hoping it'd be a little more driving. John, are you reviewing it? I mean,
yes,
can you give me a little insight on this? I mean, it's officially already out.
The record sounds like this song.
See, I don't know about that. I could see it in context being cool, but man, if the whole record sounds like that, I don't know. Because I was looking forward to this record.
I think that this is a really visually appealing video.
I actually watched it,
and that's the song is kind of middle of the road for me. I don't mind when The Damned are being
histrionic.
Yeah, like loungy and theatrical, and like, I mean, like they've done a lot of that, so they have a certain they put their flag in that style. So if they're going to go back and revisit it and do that kind of thing, it doesn't bother me too much. But there's something about this clip that I think just like, I don't want to say makes them look young per se, but it makes them look like they're like an active going concern, which they are. And a lot of times, like a lot of the times you see a lot of these guys that are in bands from the 70s that are still doing their thing. And like, it really strikes you how old they are when they're out playing. I love them and I love their modern stuff. But whenever I see a picture of the Buzzcocks these days, I'm like, man, like the Buzzcocks are old. But the Damned though, they look pretty good.
Yeah, they still have that dark mystique kind of thing going on.
And
doesn't Captain Sensible look freakishly young? Like Captain Sensible is like 67 or something. He looks like he's about like 35 or 40.
Yeah, and not only that, but the like just like I really like I, there's a few things in here that I think are just like visually work really well in this kind of video. Like he's singing into like a big old style. Like what would you call one of the mics, the kind of mic that he's using here?
It's just a regular mic, but it just has the look of like a 50s mic. Yeah, so anyway.
Yeah, it has the look of like a 50s mic, and it's like hanging from above the stage, and just the way that sort of physically, like the physicality of him singing into that, where he has to have kind of like an arm up, you know, grabbing the mic in front of him, like with the elbow bent to kind of like get the mic over to where his head is. It's just cool. It's a cool look. And there's something about this that I think the video looks cooler than the song is at times, but that's maybe more of a credit to the videographer than the band. But I don't know. It's kind of neat. I'm kind of into that. John, what's your thoughts on this? Have you heard this record yet? Or
Yeah, I have. I dug it. I think this record is the Damned doing exactly what the Damned want to do, which frankly they've done for a while. Sometimes the Damned go, I mean, what all the fans want is the fans want basically a cross of the first and third record. They want the, I guess, not experimentation, but the multiple styles of Machine Gun Etiquette mixed with the driving force of Damn, Damn, Damn. This is not that so much. Really, this is the Damned doing exactly, playing their influences on their sleeve, which works well. You know, you've got the Dave Vanian doing the crooner thing, you've got Captain Sensible doing the psychedelic thing, and you've got a heavy taste of the David Bowie style balladry and melody, if you will, which is no surprise because Tony Visconti produced it, and it goes to show how powerful a producer Tony Visconti still is. I think this record, I think this is not a Ram slam banger. That being said, I think the track is pretty good, and it goes to show the Damned have an incredible amount of skill. And to a degree, I mean, honestly, we all want the Damned to like do something totally jacked up and just tear the place up. But what we don't want is them to do that and sound old. I'd much rather them do this and sound vibrant and vital than do something else and just sound old and worn out, which they don't.
Like there's some quality to this style of the Damned that is like a little bit like Nick Cavey, right? Which if you're going to be an older rock band, that's not a bad look, right? Like that's not a bad way to go about it, because it doesn't look like you're trying to pretend you're teenagers or anything like that. So, you know, I don't know if like the song is quite there, but again, like the aesthetics of this, I'm okay with. So yeah. Anyways, you should go check it out if you're a person. I don't know. What do you recommend the Damned to if they're listening to this podcast? Go listen to watch the fucking Damned video. Let's mention this. I'm going to jump to this last story here because it's one of these things that people will always expect us to talk about more than I think we're maybe interested in talking about it. But Billy Joe Armstrong from Green Day, he started a new band. His new band is called The Long Shot. Let's ignore the fact that there's like 35 other bands in the world that have been called Long Shot. But in any case, this is the one everyone's going to know now because it's him. And they have an EP that they've put out, which is self-titled, which is called The Long Shot. You can hear a handful of songs from it. They're all streaming on YouTube and whatever else. How do we approach something like this? I'm a little bit more interested in how you approach something like this than I am even what anyone's opinion of it is. Because, like, can we all agree that, like, it sounds like Billy Joe Armstrong singing a rock song?
His voice is so distinct that it just sounds like Green Day to me.
Right. But I think that's
what... How do I approach it? I really don't approach it. I listen to 30 seconds of each one and say, hey, it's not for me.
Well, we see, but this is what I was thinking about. It's like, how much does a band like this like get by on reputation, and how much should we be actively trying to like sniff out that tendency to pay attention to something just because of the celebrity of the person that's in it? So, like, I was listening to the new record today by a band called Feel All Right, and they have this really, really appealing like guitar pop, like power poppy kind of sound, not super punk or anything like that, but you know, a little bit of that Alex Chilton kind of like big star like influence that kind of comes through there, right? And I'm listening to it and I'm like this is not, you know, this is not a hard record. This is not an aggressive record or anything like that. But I really like the songwriting here. And just from a pure, you know, band playing a rock and roll song standpoint, I really like those guys. And then I, like, not too long after, I listened to one of these long shot songs. And I'm like, well, this is not as good at all as what the other thing that I was listening to. But I feel that like a million more people will listen to this than the Feel All Right record ever. And just because of the celebrity of the singer in it. And dragons. What is that? Some sort of horrible noise.
I blow my nose.
I mean, what is this? What is this really though, Adam? This is like, the other guys don't want to be as busy as Billy Joe does, and he wants to keep playing music, so he does this. Is that what this is?
Well like, I don't begrudge him doing that, right?
No, I don't either. Okay. But the fact of the matter is, it's Green Day, but the other guys aren't interested in doing it. Or don't have time, or maybe he wants to work with somebody else. I don't know.
Like, but it doesn't strike me as something that was, like, born out of any sort of like interesting vision, right? But it's going to get the attention because it's Billy Joe, and that's what I'm conflicted about. Because again, I listen to, you know, if you want to go listen to like a likable pop rock record, there's gobs of them that are out there that you can go listen to, but no one will because they're not going to be marketed. You know, they're not going to get through all the noise in the same way that something that Billy Joe Armstrong is singing for is going to get through. And like, I can guarantee you that like tons of people, like if we were to have any way of measuring this, Punk News could go say and post 20 articles a week about a new band playing a new song. And then we could post this. And even though, you know, 80% of the people that are going to go listen to these songs aren't listening to them, say, because they're expecting to like them. They're listening to them out of like some sort of morbid curiosity or whatever. But like in the end, like Billy Joe's going to win because it's him, and people are going to pay attention because of that. And it's just like, just, I know there's no way around that. That's just the way the world works, but it's sort of driving me crazy.
What drives me crazy is we could do a super in-depth article about something that's like really interesting and like super research and took someone hundreds of hours or dozens of hours. And then we could just put a picture of Kurt Cobain and put RIP Kurt Cobain. And the picture will get way more interaction than the super in-depth article.
I don't know. I don't even know what point I'm trying to drive at on this. I'm just like, yeah.
It's just not fair. The band that lives down the street from you is way better than this, and nobody gives a crap about them, and everybody wants to watch Billy Joe. We get it. I mean, yeah, I totally understand. I don't know what the answer is either.
I guess, like, in a way, I don't want Billy Joe to go make normal rock and roll records.
But it's not really that. This, I mean, this just sounded like later day Green Day, didn't it? I mean, it was just,
well,
there was nothing.
And
I mean, just, at least it wasn't like he even took a different approach. Like, well, there's this other writing style I wanted to experiment with. I mean, this is literally less or more Green Day than that Foxborough Hot Tubs or whatever that is all the guys from Green Day, right?
He's an interesting point. Like, if Billy Joe wants to do like a non-Green Day thing, why did he just do Green Day again and something like some totally like whacked out, like a super punk record or an electro clash record? Like, why do
that's,
what
that's
he always
what I'm
does?
Saying.
You know what I mean?
Literally, it's not like he even did anything different with the songwriting process. Like I said, maybe he just had a couple other friends he wanted to play with, or maybe the other guys are home with their families and don't have enough, you know, don't have the time to make music as fast as he wants to.
I could totally hear like a counter argument from him about this, where he would be like, you know, I'm not lumping all this celebrity on me. You guys are. I just want to make a rock and roll record with a rock and roll band. And this is what I sound like when I make a rock and roll record. So if you have hangups that's going to prevent you from liking that, then that's really your problem. Right. And I could see someone like him having that approach, where they're just like, you know, fuck you, dude. I'm just being in a band.
Well, but
you know, maybe everything else is a projection.
Sing different or something. You know, I mean, he has that affected kind of singing. He could maybe open up his throat a little bit. So I don't know. It seems like you do something differently rather than that fake snotty British accent that he's been doing for like 30 years now.
Oh man, like isn't it weird to hear that criticism only because like that was the criticism back when Green Day came out, but then eventually we're all just like, oh, well, that's what he sounds like.
We're used to it, but you know what I mean? It's just like, I don't know. I like I said, maybe he just wants to make more Green Day music and the other guys don't have time, so maybe he's going to do this. I don't know.
Whenever I hear something like this from one of them, it always hops into my head where I'm trying to figure out like, oh, is there a contractual angle to this? Because do you remember when they released a record as The Network? No. Was that the band name? Just around the time of the Foxborough Hot Tubs thing happened. But they had a record that was, I mean, speaking of Electro Clash, that was like, what would the Network sound like? There was like some Devo in there. Like, they had some synths and they,
but it was the three of them.
They wore masks, right? So it was, I don't know if it was entirely clear at the time who it was, but it was one of these weird PR stunty kind of things where like everybody knew about the Network all of a sudden and everybody knew it was Green Day or at least a bunch of people from Green Day all of a sudden, but it never seemed like that cropped up organically online. Like it always seemed like it was someone's viral marketing campaign. I don't know. In any case, whenever those kinds of things happened, I remember we would always like ask like, oh, are they done with, you know, being on with what's their, what label are they on? Reprise, Reprise.
Ooh, Green Day.
I think it is Reprise.
Reprise, right? Like, are they done with Reprise? Are they trying to get out of Reprise? Are they trying to, you know, go get back to being like a cool indie band? They just need to like put out another record to get there. And inevitably, that was never how it panned out. It just ended up being some little diversion that no one remembers at the end of the day. And then they were back writing another rock opera or something like that. So I don't know. I mean, I don't want to talk about this too much because I'm just feeding into what I'm complaining about, but the injustice of the rock and roll world is really striking me here. I don't know. Are these that bad?
No, they're just bland.
Sounds like later Green Day.
Yeah. So, you know, go listen to those. They're called The Long Shot. They're not the other band called Long Shot.
They're called Long Shot because of the harsh odds they faced to make it.
They're called Long Shot because of the X-Men character from the 80s. Long Shot wasn't a mutant.
His mutant power was that he had great
luck.
Was
he even a mutant or was he just he was some Mojo's realm, wasn't he?
Yeah, I think he was a Mojo monster. So technically, he's not a mutant. He's a monster.
I love that you know these things. This is wonderful. So, anyways, you can go listen to that if you want. Anything else we want to touch on from this week?
I lost the list.
Go to the Netherlands, man. The Netherlands rules. It's paradise. I want to live there. It's paradise.
Tom, you want to talk about like E-Town Concrete or anything?
No.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk about that real quick. Yeah. Let's do it real quick. Listen, so This Is Hardcore Fest in Philadelphia. Every year Philadelphia has This Is Hardcore Fest. And it really is a gigantic, well, not gigantic, but very big event in Philadelphia in that it kind of is the hardcore event in North America. I'm pretty sure it's the biggest hardcore festival in North America. Previous years have had amazing lineups like Tragedy, Sleep, Gwar, Cro-Mags, I believe like Triptychon or something. Even though those mostly aren't hardcore bands, they usually would mix it up. The past couple of years, they've really scaled back. This year, the headliner of This Is Hardcore Fest is One King Down, 10 Yard Fight, and E-Town Concrete. Other bands playing include Sick of It All, All Out War, Incendiary, knocked loose. Carnivore AD, which is interesting, but not really. You know, Queensway, just kind of a lot of the hardcore bands, you always see at hardcore fests. I guess there's two ways to look at that. There's one way to look at that is I'm not really interested in any of this except for maybe Shark Attack.
There's no must-see stuff on there.
However, I would counter Tom you guys probably, like, if you guys go to like a hardcore festival, there's dudes that all they listen to is hardcore, or they make it seem that way. Like that's all that, like, they love the most obscure, terrible hardcore, you know, bands like Project X, which is terrible, or Judge, which is terrible. And those bands aren't even that obscure, you know, but things like
John, if they're really that obscure, you've never heard of them. So just quit trying. But I know what you mean.
I know.
Like bands that only ever put on anything on tape and
Yeah. So those guys
who don't own shirts with arms.
This is playing directly to them. So to This Is Hardcore's credit, they're not going for the more mainstream guy like me, you know, by having Sleep play or by having Tragedy play. They're going for strictly hardcore. So I would say kudos on them for really, you know, doing it. The question is, are they doing that because they really want to go back to they don't want to forget their roots? Or are they doing this just because everybody that has reunited? There's no one left to reunite. So now we're just kind of
schedule for this stuff, you know. It is what it is, but yeah, there's nothing there make me drive out to Philadelphia for. Maryland Death Fest had a better lineup.
Yeah.
All right, so that's This Is Hardcore Fest. Once again, we are so hopefully ignorant of what's going on in the hardcore universe that I don't know. We're probably being overly dismissive of it. I assume we are. I'm just apologizing because I'm Canadian. Tom,
yes,
you want to play a song and wrap this sucker up here?
Sure. I'm going to play a song from a local band that just put out an EP. Where I live, if anybody's really trying to triangulate, is actually right between Grand Rapids and Lake Michigan. I'm like halfway to Lake Michigan. So this band is from a town right on Lake Michigan, back to my west. And the band is called Pharaoin, and it's Pharoin, like heroin, but PH. I have no idea what it means. I'll have to ask them sometime. But they just put out a new EP. It's called New Ways to Annoy. So let's play the almost title track, the last song of the 5 or 6. It's called New Way to Annoy. So this is Pharaoin, New Way to Annoy.
I don't want to bite my tongue! I don't need to hide or run. I don't need to watch a new finger pointing fear of you.
All right, we're back. That was Pharaoin. So if anyone wants to send us email or anything like that, you can do it at podcast@punknews.org. We are approaching episode 400. That is the next episode, maybe. We have some things up our sleeve that we might inject between now and then just to prolong the wait. And 400, let me tell you, folks, we don't actually have a plan for it. So we'll figure it out. We have lots of time, right?
Yeah, we got at least 5 days.
This has been a Velour Underground production. I am Greg Simpson, producer of this podcast. Hit me up if you want me to mix, master, or produce your podcast, even from afar. Or, you got a band you want to come record with me in scenic Lafayette, Indiana? Let's do it. Hit me up at greg@velourundergroundstudios.com.